Welcome to The Social Network Show. How do you feel about social technology and this connected, networked world we live in? Your host of The Social Network Show, Dr. J, interviews informed and entertaining guests to tackle the most pressing digital issues of interest to business professionals and nonprofit leaders, to parents and educators, and to anyone wondering where all this is taking us. And now, your host, experimental psychologist, Dr. Jane Karwoski.
This episode of The Social Network Show is brought to you in part by PulseInsights.com. Pulse Insights adds value to your website analytics through micro-surveys scientifically designed to find out what you most need to know about your website visitors. You'll see an example at thesocialnetworkstation.com. Social media and social networks, and increasingly we hear the combined term social media networks, can absorb a fair amount of your time. Some people jokingly refer to Farmville, Candy Crush, other sites, or even texting as addictive. How seriously should you take that possibility for yourself or for your family? Today, you will hear from one of the founders of the Technology Wellness Center in Scottsdale, Arizona, Dr. Lisa Stroman. She is author of a brand new book, soon to be featured on Amazon.com, Unplug, Raising Kids in a Technology-Addicted World. Meanwhile, it's available at Lulu.com. Welcome to the Social Network Show, Dr. Stroman.
Thank you so much. So excited to be here.
You and your partner in the TWC, Technology Wellness Center, Dr. Melissa Westendorf, you both graduated from a program that combined a JD and a PhD in clinical psychology from Villanova and Drexel universities. From your backgrounds as both attorneys and clinical psychologists, what led you to establish the Technology Wellness Center?
I would say that primarily that having been parents first is like really what started us off. But both of us having worked in the field, myself working with teen clients on a day-to-day basis over the last 10 years, really started seeing a trend that started back about 8-9 years ago, right after I got in, that there's a lot of different things that are impacting them from a technology standpoint. And I really had a strong relationship. Melissa was a mentor to me in the program. She was a couple years ahead of me in the program, and we just became really good friends. And she went into the other side of the field of forensics and started working as a forensic psychologist. And just as friends and as parents, we had conversations, and she started talking to me about some of the legal consequences that she was seeing with a client that was stealing to support his gaming habit. And she had a lot of cases. She worked with sexual predators, and a lot of them had used basic internet sites. And so that was really kind of the beginning of where I said, we really should try to do something. Our kids are young enough, and we really both see it from two different perspectives. And that's when I asked her if she would be willing to come on board and do it with me. So that's what started us off.
Okay. So some real grassroots experience there. And in connection with kids and raising children, do you think that you could tell us some of the social aspects of what might you see, social risks, I guess you would say, of overuse of technology and even neurological effects? Is that something we should be concerned about?
For sure. I mean, the social risks are really, really great. If you look at what the kids are doing, they're actually modifying what they're doing on a day-to-day basis based on their social presence online. And that's the part that is really frustrating and difficult to see, not just as a clinician, but as a parent raising kids that are coming up into that world. From the brain aspect and the neurological, that was the part that, fortunately, I'm part of a clinic. Most of the doctors that I work under in this practice are from Mayo Clinic. I've got a lot of access to a lot of different really, I would say, high-end research papers and things like that through. My husband's actually a primary care physician, so I'm able to go through some of those things. And finding all of these articles and research that's coming, mostly a lot of it from Asia primarily in the beginning, but for example, the European Journal of Radiology did a MRI study, functional MRI study of brains of computer gamers, and those gamers that were actually spending more than 3 hours a day online gaming had a significantly different lower level of white matter in the brain. So they structurally have a different brain than those kids that aren't. So that was the part that really drove us into kind of hyperdrive of not only do we need to do this in our personal practice, but we need to write about it. We need to go talk on radios and have such, so thankful that, that we have the platform and that you invited us on. But that's really what our force is really to kind of get the message out to parents because they really don't see it yet.
That is something that hasn't been in the forefront, and fascinating research on that. Well, how do you define technological wellness? You know, when your name, a Technology Wellness Center, what does that look like?
So wellness, the reason why we didn't call it technology addiction, there's really no actual diagnosis in the DSM currently. The new version of the DSM has an internet gaming disorder in the areas to be further researched. There's no actual diagnosis. And I hate, my personal opinion is when you give somebody a label, they live up to it. And I really wanted to focus on how do we treat an area that we can't get rid of. Technology is amazing. I wouldn't get rid of it. We're online, we're in different states, we're doing this right. radio show, and it's amazing. So how do we create balance and how do we use it in a way that doesn't impact our lives negatively? And that's what we really define as technology wellness.
Well, one thing I don't think anyone is addicted to is running to the post office. You do whatever it takes to make sure your business runs efficiently, but constant trips to the post office can get in the way. So with our sponsor, Stamps.com, you will be able to spend less time at the post office and more time growing your business. Stamps.com makes mailing and shipping any letter, any package easy. And by the way, from our own experience here at SNI, I can tell you that it is very easy to set up. It is not a big hassle. You know, there aren't a lot of hoops to jump through or the wall isn't very high to start using this. You use your own computer and printer to buy and print official U.S. postage. The digital scale does all the thinking for you. It calculates the exact postage needed and helps you decide the best class of mail. Depends on your needs. And so you can join over 500,000 small businesses that use Stamps.com and never go to the post office again. Right now, use my promo code SOCIAL for this special offer. A no-risk trial plus a $110 bonus offer. That's a digital scale and that plugs right into your computer and up to $55 free postage. Don't wait. Go to stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in social. That's stamps.com. Enter social.
In fact, I actually use stamps.com for my business, and I was going to send you a copy of my book, and I will use my stamps.com to send it to you right after this recording.
Well, thanks, Dr. Stroman. I'll appreciate that. So now, getting back to the real world of addictions, what do you think, Dr. Lisa, is a technology addiction, even if you don't label someone as that, but in the concept itself, what would that look like, addicted to technology?
So a lot of times it comes out when somebody's actually having a conflict, obviously, in their real life. So interpersonally, they're having issues. They may have been trying to change their behavior in one way and aren't able to do it. Sometimes the issue comes up is like fear of missing out. They really can't disconnect. So even if they're on a computer for work all day, when they get home, they actually reconnect and they go back on computer because they're checking all their social media sites and they want to make sure that they're not being left out of something. So a lot of times it's neglecting kind of the real people in our lives that I see is the primary reason that I get somebody in the clinic for help.
So someone feels like they're they're being edged out, you might say, of the relationship they had, a face-to-face relationship, because of this person's over-reliance or over-connectivity. they're just doing that to the exclusion of the people around them.
Right. And it comes out as a sadness, or it comes out as is they're feeling unhappy. And what I looked at originally, personally, was the Internet Addiction Disorder Test. Dr. Kimberly Young created it a long time ago, and it's really taken from the AA test, and it's a self-report, and it's very simple in the person can actually write down. And what I found is the most important part is actually the assessment. And so Melissa and I actually set up to look at real life, real clinical experiences, what would be helpful. And we looked up interpersonal, which is what we were just talking about, is one of the primary, but there's also physical, emotional, and behavioral. And so we created this TUC assessment, which technology used continuum. And we looked at those four areas, which is really helpful for, I think, families and individuals that are really kind of struggling with it.
And the four areas, again, are short-term memory.
Sure. It's interpersonal, emotional, physical, and behavioral.
And these are signs or symptoms, whichever you would call them, that the person who's using the technology expresses, not just their family members, right?
Correct. And it's becoming more aware. So for instance, I volunteer at my kids' school. They're little, they're in first and third grade now. And so I do the health screening for them. Well, we have about a 40% result in that screening for kids that are having eye convergence issues. And so I talked to an ophthalmologist and I said, is this new? And he said, it's absolutely new. And if you look at what's happening is they're not exercising their eye muscles the way that they used to. And so if they're reading on digital platforms, or if they're playing games, or they're being connected all the time, they're losing that muscle. And so that's an example of a physical symptom that's just starting to kind of come around, that we're starting to see with younger kids. Behaviorally, they have different things. So,
well, by eye convergence, do you mean that they're becoming nearsighted? Is that what that is?
Right. Their eyes are actually having an inability to actually see depth the way that it used to. And so they're having trouble reading, and they're having trouble, like, actually they're bringing the two eyes together to actually read or to see something. Yeah.
Okay. So what about when, this isn't so much for children, although technology is being incorporated in education, so the school life is their work life, but when, like for an adult, so much of their professional life or personal life involves being connected, where is the line, how can a person assess for themselves whether they're overusing it?
So it's really the same thing with adults. What we know is that we have neuroplasticity. We know that new research is showing that our brains are actually able to repair and function and train ourselves all the way up into our 60s now. And we used to think that that was really much earlier. But what we see that with people who are connected online all day, those same eye issues. And so that's why the same eye issues behaviorally, they're actually becoming more lethargic, which impacts their health in terms of their physical being, like whether or not they're getting out and they're exercising as much, because they have an ability now not to even leave their house to go to work. And we can work in our homes. Like, we really don't have to do a lot of things that we used to have to do. And so it's really, from our standpoint, assessment is number one. And wherever you get it, we created the assessment for kids and adults. So we have two different versions depending on the age that you put in. But that's primarily the first one. If you look physically, if you have any impact, if you have any emotional impact, that's the kind of lability of mood, whether or not your mood's like contingent upon whether or not you're connected or not, or you're getting that input interpersonally, if your relationships are suffering, and really if socially in that situation, like really if your online friends become more important, or your online connections become more important than your real life connections. So those are kind of the areas that we look at for adults just as well.
Well, when is it or is it ever useful to describe someone as addicted versus overusing?
So it's starting to become a lot more common, and there's a lot of different treatment centers that are coming up that are taking that model of addiction and actually applying it. And I think that there's a couple that are, I know Dr. Young has one that's like an inpatient in a hospital setting. I'm not certain what exactly happens there on that front. But if you give somebody the understanding of what addiction is, and it's a real phenomenon. We really do have addictive personalities, and you have families that have addictive traits in it. I come from a very long family of addiction. I've already talked to my 7 and 8 year old about what that means. What my son is completely a sugar addict, which is comes from his mom, of course. But so I say to him, I said, even if you're addicted to sugar now, you need to understand what that feels like. And it's not that word of can you go without, or can you stop yourself from doing it or not, and really understanding balance and pulling back from it. Giving someone the understanding of what addiction is, I think, is really important, and really looking at the genetics behind their family history, looking at the behavior choices that they have. And that's what CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy does, is really kind of looks at really all those systems combined to give them a better understanding. And that can help them disconnect.
I think let's go in the second half of the show. Let's talk a little bit more about cognitive behavioral therapy and how that addresses these issues. And this is your host, Jane Karwoski. You are listening to Dr. Lisa Strohman of Technology Wellness Center. She will share more with you about technology overuse and addiction in the second half of today's episode of The Social Network Show.
Questions? Comments? Reach out to us. Our email address is questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com or find us on Twitter @SocialNetShow.
You're listening to The Social Network Show and Lisa Strohman, JD, PhD, co-founder of the Scottsdale, Arizona Technology Wellness Center. I'm your host, Dr. J. Well, Dr. Strohman, you are a cognitive behavioral therapy expert, and I was wondering, what about that approach do you find to be especially useful in dealing with technology overuse or addiction?
It's vital in what I do in this area, because really cognitive behavioral therapy is one of the few forms that we know is research and evidence-based. We know that it works, and we know that if you can look at the negative, irrational belief systems of what we call the cognitive aspect of what people are doing, and identify those as such, is that they're irrational and that they're not real, and look at how their behavior is being impacted by that negative irrational thought, and really show them that chain and how that's impacting them, it's very, very important and successful in changing that person's life.
Okay. Do you have any stories that you can share with us in an impersonal manner, with regard to, some of the problems that have been presented and how this technique helped them, or what approach you took?
Sure. I've got a couple. I've got an adult who came in who essentially was in his late 20s and was really having trouble interpersonally, and actually physically was having trouble having any sort of intimate relationship with women. And it was one of the first times early in my career that I had to identify that a non-medical reason, there was everything had been ruled out, but a situation where I had a 29-year-old gentleman who had admitted that he had been addicted and had spent, my term addicted, because from the age of 9 had spent every day at least 45 minutes to an hour a day online using porn, escalating into different areas, and at the point where in his early 20s could no longer be sexually aroused by a normal relationship or somebody who in real life was somebody that he could connect with, and was desperate, honestly, to have a real family and really connect with somebody. So that would be a story that I've heard now from then to now, many times over. So that's just one kind of area that I would say is impacted, which is in the area of kind of online pornography and how prolific it is online at this point. I guess another really important story would be someone who had basically had from the age of 17, attending high school or graduating from high school, had told his parents that he had gone off to college, had falsified all of his transcripts and the university for 4 years, having attended, going into a library every day. They were paying for an apartment for him. And he was really kind of avoiding real life. And only at the point where his mom was purchasing graduation announcements from law school, so we're talking 7 years, and this is gaming, somebody who is totally addicted to gaming. So the parents had paid for 7 years, quote unquote, of university when he had 11 credits to his unit, to his name. So
in reality, but the university actually thought he had been doing much better than that.
Well, he had actually withdrawn. Like he went to 2 semesters. He failed out of, I think, the second semester because he couldn't stop gaming. And then he started going to libraries, and then he created this, obviously as an adult, your parents don't have access to any of your records. And so then he falsified all of this data for nearly 7 years. And only when when his mom was having him graduate from law school, did she realize, and did he come clean, that he had not actually attended. So that's a real life story. And I've had this semester alone, I've had 3 students that have dropped out of university level classes and because of Netflix or because of gaming or because of various things that they can't actually disconnect from. So it's becoming more of a problem.
What are there differences? We've talked about the internet facilitating these addictions to porn or to gaming and so on. Is there a difference between technology addictions and other types of addiction?
Yeah, similarities and differences. You know, the similarities are that the reward pathway in your brain is very similar in anything that you become, quote unquote, addicted to, if you're actually using that in a proper sense of addiction. But what we look at is the difference between a chemical addiction or a substance addiction and a process addiction. So that's a distinction that if you're going to look at technology addiction, it's really looking at a process addiction, which would be more in line with a gambling addiction or a sex addiction. And the one that I think is most relevant is probably more like a food addiction, but that's obviously something you ingest. But technology to me is something, gambling we can get rid of. You know, if you're a pedophile and it's inappropriate, like you're not, you can cut out sex and you can cut out that inappropriate behavior. Technology is something that we all have to live with. You can't go to a grocery store without using technology. You can't exist without using technology in today's world. And with over 3 billion users worldwide, it's really something that we have to learn how to deal with. And so to me, the closest addiction would be probably food, where you have to learn how to balance it. Because I would love to have chocolate cake every day. I do have that sugar part, but I can't do it and be healthy. So
on the way to the studio, there's a store called Nothing Bundt Cakes.
And I was thinking,
I wonder if they have any organic version.
Love this.
Is there help or resources that you offer online for those who are far away from Scottsdale?
Yes, absolutely. And that's really our goal when we created this, is to create this membership site. Technologywellnesscenter.com is really set up to give really low cost. I mean, we're just trying to cover our costs in it, to give actual access to online experts. So we have ourselves, we have a medical team on board, we have a legal team, we have a lieutenant who used to be in charge of the Internet Crimes Unit. I used to work at the FBI as a visiting scholar. I did my dissertation with them. So I have all of these resources on my side to help people like figure out how, if they get into trouble or if something's happening, how to really best assess that and get themselves help and get themselves, extricate themselves out of that situation.
Excellent. So that is something that, the website is technologywellnesscenter.com, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And how can, now if listeners want to reach you, is there a contact sheet there on the webpage?
Yeah, they can contact me via the site or drlisa@technologywellnesscenter.com. But there is a contact button on the site. Yeah.
Okay. Have you used social media sites yourself to promote this?
I have, actually. It was a new learning experience for me. And a funny story is I had a client, I started Twitter, and I was so excited when I hit 50 followers, and I told this 19-year-old that I had 50 followers, and she looked at me like, you know, I had leprosy. And she's like, well, I have 6,000, you know? So I'm a little better. I hit over 300. But I do, I'm connecting on Twitter. I have a Facebook site. I'm on LinkedIn. So I'm using social media now.
Okay. What is your Twitter handle?
It is, gosh, that's a good question. I think it's Dr. Lisa Stroman. That's maybe a great question. Speaking of, what is my Twitter handle? I know that I'm under my own name. I didn't want to have any aliases.
Right. This may account for your...
Yes. My lack of followers, yes.
Yeah. Let's try to do something there for
Dr. Lisa Stroman. Yes, that's what it is.
Okay. And I assume that you're periodically sharing some tidbits through Twitter on information about internet or technology addiction. And I'm glad you mentioned it as technology, because it does take in things like the cell phone. And, you mentioned several different types of gaming can be a social network, but not necessarily, I guess. So that and your Facebook page, do you happen to remember what that is?
Yeah, the Facebook page is under Dr. Lisa Stroman as well.
So we want you to remember that. So any other thoughts that you have to share with us that we haven't are especially important that you'd like to touch on?
I would really encourage people not to feel any stigma over what is actually a current issue in people's lives. I think that reaching out before it becomes a big problem is most important. And that's really, again, part of where I'm trying to help people privately and in their own homes if they need to do it, so that they actually don't get to the point where they have to go in and get severe help for it, or they lose relationships over it or families over it. So it's really something mm-hmm. that I think that the people should really pay attention to and kind of just monitor whether or not they have balance in their life.
That's a good point. We need balance in everything. And like you say, it's not something that we can just scratch out of our life entirely. Technology is a part of life, and so using it wisely, it can be an uphill battle. Let's face it. That's let me ask you this. Does it seem to you to be more of a problem for, quote, digital natives, unquote, people who have from their maybe grade school days been using technology, or do you see it across the board?
You know, it used to be that I love Mark Prensky's theory on digital natives, and I think that it really is different for younger kids versus their parents or older adults. And I would say probably right now, the kids that are born in the 80s are kind of the cusp time where mm-hmm. they're really kind of proficient in getting around different things that parents may buy in terms of software monitoring, things like that. But in terms of the older people, they are catching up pretty rapidly. And I see that typically their issues are more on the interpersonal side, where I see relationships being impacted by kind of old boyfriends that are coming back into the fray, or old stories that are coming back via social media sites and things like that. That's the part that I see is the biggest issue for them in my practice, for sure.
So that would impact relationships, certainly. Have you come across many couples, for instance, that reconnecting with the old flame, or maybe not even an old flame, maybe it's somebody new they meet online? Is that something that you see a lot of?
I see a lot of it. And I think that you and I previously had kind of an offline discussion that you have a colleague that works in that area. And I think that, to me, it isn't, you have to redefine what what infidelity is these days. And you have to really redefine right. on what that emotional connection is, because those are the things that I see as creating most of the conflict in couples. And then if you have a separation or you have a divorce or whatever, and there's children involved, now you have two separate households that may have two separate rules on technology use. And so now you're having forensic issues coming in where you've got attorneys that are getting involved and the kids are like, I want to go stay with dad, or the kids are recording mom losing her mind or drinking, you know, and turning that into dad. And so it's definitely impacting the families in a much broader sense than I ever thought it would.
And the colleague you mentioned here at UNLV is Kat, K-A-T, Hurtline, and she's been on the show a couple times. So if listeners are interested in knowing more about that, just search for it off our blog page and or online infidelity. So we've covered a lot of territory here, and that is one thing that I notice, even in terms of like what are the domains we talk about on the social network show. It gets into a lot of different areas simply because it is so pervasive in our life. The internet and technology affects everything. So, well, thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Lisa Stroman. Appreciate that, and I hope that people will visit the Technology Wellness Center online and take a look at the wonderful resources you have.
Well, thank you so much for having me and for doing this. I know how much work, a lot of people don't know how much work it is to create content and be ready and have these every week. And I encourage people to go back and listen to your old productions, because they're great. I've listened to probably over 5 or 6 of them now. So, so great information that you bring. And I just very much appreciate you bringing this to the public, because it's an important issue.
Well, thank you. And thank you for listening, our listeners. We bring you leaders in business, cyber citizenship, and the ethical, legal, and social implications of our networked, connected world. Please shop for our app at Google Play or the iTunes App Store. The Social Network Show is the name of the app, and please share it with your friends. Our listener survey site, again, is podsurvey.com/social. Do have fun and be safe online and off until you listen again.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the worldwide show dedicated to social media networking and understanding the connected, networked world we live in. Listen to our archive shows on thesocialnetworkshow.com and follow us on Twitter at Social Net Show. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia Incorporated. The views and opinions expressed are those of our host and guest and may not be the views and opinions of Social Network Intermedia.